Wealth and Talent Radio.
Well, Barnum, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well, Jeffrey. Thank you so much.
Well, welcome to the call. You are absolutely live on the More Heart Than Talent Mindset call. How are you tonight?
I'm doing really well. We're having a crazy snowstorm, which I think can explain a few of my crazy things going on here, but I'm so glad I'm on with all of you tonight.
Well, here's what we're going to do. My exceptional former coaching client and great friend, husband and wife team, Kevin and Pamela, I'm going to take a few quick announcements. I'm going to jump into the inspirational portion of our call. So, Pamela, that was great teamwork between you and Kevin and I, which we have always been a great team, going on for 8 years. Do you believe that?
It seems like yesterday so often, I tell you.
So I'm going to go ahead and cover a few quick announcements. I'll come right back. Your book is fascinating. Being a former drug addict, alcoholic, it read like a fiction novel. I thought I was back in the life for a second, which is very interesting because yesterday was my 30th anniversary of being clean and sober.
Oh, congratulations. But
your book brought back many flashbacks of back in the day. So I remember I could have been in this book. I could have been one of those guys. This is a must book. Let me get the announcements done because your content is fascinating. Welcome, everyone. This is Jeffrey Combs, president and founder of Golden Mastermind Seminars Incorporated. There on the other line with me is Pamela Barnum, who has more titles and more degrees in the thermometer. So I'll be bringing her out here in a few minutes. So Pamela is a very exceptional and just a fantastic guest. So you can tell Pamela and I are going to have fun. The announcements I have for you real quick is Happy Holidays, number one. This is the next to last call of the calendar year 2017. So this is almost the All She Wrote call. And next Saturday, I will be in beautiful Marina Del Rey. That will be in Los Angeles, California with Brittany Cara. On January 6th, I'll be in Fort Lauderdale, Florida with my exceptional friend, long-term client, Lisa Pazanza. January 13th, Dallas, Texas. January 20th, Spartanburg, South Carolina. I want to thank my longtime friend and client, Bridget Bartley, for bringing me back to her hometown. That is a beautiful little city in the South. Fantastic place. San Mateo, California, January 27th. My backyard. That's about 60 miles from my house. I will be filling in February 3rd, February 10th. I'll be in Orange County, California with Marissa Campbell. February 24th, Orlando, Florida. March 3rd, Saddlebrook, New Jersey. That will be Diane Hughes Hunt's first event that she is hosting me. And in Orlando, Colleen Olitsky will be hosting me. March 10th, I'll be in Baltimore, Maryland. March 24th, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. March 31st, Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And I will be back in Rye, New York, either April 7th or 14th. And if you were in Rye, New York, that unequivocally was an exceptional event. I want to thank all of you who attended. So that I will be repeating that early April. I'm beginning to fill in the dates. And Pam, I'm going to be in Buffalo, and we'll discuss what it was like back in Buffalo back in the day. So if you've not had the opportunity to have a free 15-minute coaching call from me, I offer those each and every day. If you'd like to take advantage of one of those calls, feel free to inbox me on Facebook, and I will get back to you in very, very short fashion. Now, it brings me great pleasure to bring to you tonight an exceptional first-class woman, Pamela Barnum. I had the privilege of coaching Pam and her husband, Kevin, who is equally as first-class, and then I'm going to have Pam tell a little bit about how her and Kevin met, their story, how they became exceptional network marketers, business owners, and especially how Pam became a published author of the highly inspiring book, A Lawyer's Case for Network Marketing. Here's a little bit about Pam, and I'll add in some of my own content. But Pamela Barnum, for 22 years, has experience working in the criminal justice system, first as an undercover police officer and then as a prosecuting attorney. She and her husband, Kevin, walked away from six-figure salaries to pursue the profession of network marketing for time and financial freedom. Pam has received several awards as a network marketer in her top-tier company and has been a keynote speaker in front of multiple thousands, delivering her insight on the profession of network marketing. She's also been featured in many books, The Flip-Flop CEO, The Four-Year Career, and Beyond the Badge. She's also a guest trainer on John Maxwell's course, The 15 Laws of Growth for Network Marketers. Pam has also appeared in the internationally distributed publications Prosper Magazine and a magazine that I've written in and been featured in many times, which is an exceptional piece for network marketers, Networking Time, owned by the great Chris Gross. And she and her husband Kevin live in the beautiful Canadian Rocky Mountains, where it is snowing, with their young son Caleb. And you can connect with Pamela by visiting her website, PamelaBarnum.com. That's www, and that's P-A-M-E-L-A, Barnum.com. And at the end of the call, Pamela will let you know where you can get your hands on the hardback version of the book I have in my hands, which is a must. This book is not only a must for network marketers, but if you ever had addiction challenges, this book will bring you right back to back in the day. Pamela, great to have you on the call tonight.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey, and I feel like I'm right there with you because we do go back a ways, and when you mentioned Buffalo, it brought a huge smile to my face.
Remember we had that event in Russell's own? Russell was a trip. Russell, well, I'll have to think of his name before the call's over. We had that fabulous hotel in Buffalo. We did a little private event for 40 of your teammates back in the day. That was really, really an exceptional experience for me. I believe that was about 2009 or 10. Do you remember that day?
I do very well, because we were just sort of launching our career, and we had heard you because we were listening to a call that Susan Sly was on, and you were interviewing her, and we were like, wow, we've got to talk to this guy. So as soon as the call ended, Kevin wrote down the phone number, called you right away, because first off, you had us laughing like crazy through the call. We're like, this guy gets us. He speaks our language. So Kev called you, connected with you right away, obviously as a coach, but has become a great friend as well over the years. So
you could tell I had that drug edge left over, couldn't you? That grindy grind?
Maybe. You definitely spoke our language, let's just say that.
You could, that methamphetamine, cocaine, stay up all night, you know, that, I mean, I was there, I understood it. You're talking addict talk, drug dealer talk, you're talking what it was like to be on that edge. So, I mean, in your, this whole book, but let's do this. This, like, you can tell I love this book. I've been reading it on and off for days, and it's, but here's what I want you to share with them. How did you come to writing this book? And then I'm going to ask you a little bit about your background, but what was the real impetus to bring this book to the free market?
I think so often we hear, you know, the hype and the craziness that goes around with network marketing. And every time I was asked to speak about network marketing, I was passionate about getting past all of that, because we have such a great profession. We don't need to hype it up or get crazy around it. So I had done a few presentations, and of course I share some stories about my background and things that I had done undercover and prosecuting. And after every presentation, people would say, you need to write a book, you need to write a book. I thought, no, that's definitely not who I am. I would never write a book. And I made the mistake of mentioning it to Kevin, and he was like, you've got to write a book. So he practically locked me in my office. I started writing, and I really enjoyed the process. But network marketers have so much to be proud of, and I think we often forget about the brilliance of the different types of people. Everyone, like you said, Jeffrey, from recovering addicts to neurosurgeons have been successful network marketers, and we are one of the only professions that makes a home for everybody, regardless of experience, regardless of background. There is a place, and because we have amazing trainers like you to show people what is possible, I think that was really, for me, a huge inspiration.
Well, thank you for sharing that content. And this, your book is going to absolutely sell off the shelves when it gets into the Barnes & Noble. The book is very well done. It has you in front of a courtroom. It looks fantastic, and you grace that courtroom quite well, Mrs. Barnum. I must tell you that. So
thank you.
You do look good.
It's a real courtroom.
I can tell, and you look good in plum. That would be the color, right?
That's it.
So I want to cover, and I do have the privilege of knowing both you and Kevin. We are very good friends. We've been to many events together. I know you're going to come to Breakthroughs to Success here very soon. Kevin's been. I coach both of you. So I know a lot of your background. It's fascinating. So a little bit about me, Pam, is I grew up in the 70s, so I got to see the movie Serpico. You know where I'm going with this, right?
I do, yeah.
I got to see the movie Serpico when it came out. Then, as fate would have it, I actually once dated a woman who, she swears, her father was one of Serpico's friends. And she said he might have been that guy that was on his side in the movie. So for those who've never seen the movie Serpico, it's one of Al Pacino's early roles after Godfather 1, about an undercover New York policeman who stays undercover for years and then breaks down some of the corrupt police officers that go on there. Now, what's fascinating, Pam, is I didn't know the depth of how long you and Kevin were undercover. So in 2015, Kevin was at a Breakthroughs to Success event. He laid it out for people, and I mean, their jaw was dropping. 9 years undercover, is that correct?
That is right.
Tell the folks listening a little bit about how you and Kevin met. The book breaks it down a little, and it really sets the pace of the book of what you did to pay your dues in the legal profession so that eventually you could leave and become the business owner that you are now. And one thing you definitely have is street sense. That's what so many people miss. They have book sense, but they don't have street sense. You understand that edge that you got to live on when you're undercover. Share a little bit about your background, you and Kevin.
Well, it was pretty interesting how we met. We were working in drug units. It was made up of 89 undercover officers. Now, only a handful of them actually worked deep cover, so would go and live in another town with another name, et cetera, and the rest would be cover officers. And there was one female officer, and that was me. So I got moved around a lot on short-term projects, but there was a big project coming up that Kevin had already been assigned to, and I had no idea who he was. I had heard of him because he was a bit of a legend in the drug unit. He'd done some crazy things, and I was told that he was going to be my partner on a 10-month project, and we were going to have to act as a common law couple. I never met this guy. I go to this town that's 4.5 hours away from where I live, move into this little apartment with this guy who has hair halfway down his back, macrame beads, doesn't wear shoes, this whole thing. I think, oh my goodness, what am I getting into here? So we move in, and long story short, I guess, you know, 10 months later, we decided we were going to make it the real deal, and we both left that project after it was finished and formed a relationship and got married for real. But it was, we call it our government prearranged marriage.
That, it was a fact. But let's take him to what undercover really means. This isn't the movies. This is real undercover.
No.
This isn't you're carrying a plastic weapon that fires blanks. You're in the big leagues. You are undercover making friends with top-tier, big-time methamphetamine dealers, cocaine dealers, people that are selling by the kilos, by the pounds. I mean, you're going undercover, pulling down million-dollar stings in operations. The book breaks it down a little. So this is the kind of situations that people make movies of. I mean, you're a very attractive woman, but you're dealing with a criminal element. What was the adrenaline like, and what was the anxiety like living undercover for this many years?
Oh, you're acting all the time, and you have to remember your background story. You have to remember your cover story. So you really try to keep it as close to reality as possible so that you don't trip up. But there's not a lot of room for error, and I think the one thing that working undercover taught me is how to really listen to people, how to really look and listen to my surroundings and see what's going on. Because, you know, I brought that skill to network marketing, absolutely, but in network marketing, it's never a life or death kind of thing. Nobody's really going to get hurt. Someone might get their feelings hurt. But aside from that, network marketing, not too many bad things can happen.
Right, and also the danger you're involved in. So the movies paint drug dealers as dumb guys who...
Oh, no.
Right, exactly. So here's what I want people to really understand. When this kind of criminal element is, this is going to sound contradictory, but are top-tier criminals. These are the type of people who sense danger. They can tell when they're being lied to. They can tell when... And they will cross-examine you. These aren't dumb guys. These are people who are millionaires on a criminal element. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I have to say, too, and this may really rub a few people the wrong way, but a lot of the drug dealers we met were really decent people. They're doing horrible things a lot of times, but their humanity was there on a level that you don't really understand until you're a part of that. And, you know, people, I think that working that long in that element really gave me an understanding of grace and an understanding of, you know, people make bad choices and screw their lives up and do lots of things. But I have to say, I didn't meet one single drug dealer, and Kevin's the same, and he met hundreds more than I ever did, that grew up in a loving, kind, June and Ward Cleaver kind of upbringing. They all had some sort of history and baggage that they brought with them. Now, I'm not saying that people who have bad upbringings are destined to be drug dealers. Obviously, many of them go on to be incredible people that change the world. But I think so often we get caught up in painting people with a certain brush and thinking, oh, if you do that, that means you must be this way. And it transitions to network marketing as well. When, you know, I'm sure many of the callers have had negative flashback or negative backlash about being a network marketer. And just learning how to handle that and carry yourself really makes a huge difference.
So you have written this book as if you are an attorney. So you go from undercover to being an attorney. In America, you would be the equivalent of a district attorney. I believe
that's
in
right.
Canada, is that called a crown attorney?
That's a crown attorney, yeah.
Okay, so that means that you're working on the side of the government. So before we get into the real depth of the book, how do you go from undercover drug agent to crown attorney?
Well, you know, there comes a point where jumping out of moving cars and buying drugs for a living gets to be a little bit past for you. And I wanted to be a mom. Kevin and I got married, and we wanted to start a family. So buying crack as a mom is never really a great idea. So I was in law school while I was working undercover. I was working full-time as a police officer, attending law school full-time. Now, I skipped a lot of classes, mind you, but I still passed with great grades. And I remember even hiding my law books in the false ceiling of where our safe house was and things through all of those different projects. But I transitioned because I thought prosecuting drug dealers would be a more mom-friendly, family-friendly kind of job. Turns out I was wrong on a lot of levels, but that's why I left. I would have stayed, I think, working in the drug unit if we hadn't started a family. That's why our son Caleb takes credit for us becoming network marketers, because he said, you know, if it wasn't for me, you guys would have never tried network marketing. And I know he might be right, but that was the transition into law.
I have one question I have to ask you. I never asked you this when I coached you. What was your favorite weapon?
Oh, you know, I only had a Sig Sauer. We had a small undercover gun that I didn't bring with me all that often, and there's a couple of reasons why. First of all, being female, you know, I'd love to say that drug dealers have caught up with the new millennium way of thinking as far as feminism and women's lib, but they haven't. Women are treated much, much differently, and it's a very chauvinistic, macho kind of environment. So there was that around it as well. But yeah, we were very, very cautious. And in Canada, it's a little bit different too. We're not allowed, you can't have citizens getting permits to carry handguns around on the streets. So we didn't have that as much to deal with. Of course, with the drug dealers and the big level guys, we absolutely did. But we were usually there on business terms, not on show me what you got kind of terms, if that makes sense.
So at what point do you make the transition? Do you and Kevin say, okay, we have paid our dues in the criminal justice system 22 years. Walk us through how you become business owners.
Yeah, that was, you know, totally by accident, I think just a chain of events. We had been trying other things, real estate, investing in the stock market. We thought of getting a storage unit business. We're looking at all sorts of ways to make an additional income. We had great salaries. We both had six-figure incomes in our jobs, but we knew that eventually we wanted to retire, and we always wanted more. We thought, okay, there's more. How do we get that? And a friend just casually introduced us to some products. We tried them. People started asking us. We said, oh, call her. She'll tell you all about it. Said, no,
now, this was in Barrie, Ontario, right?
This is in Barrie, Ontario.
Now, the company you're in today is almost a $1 billion company, but when you started this company 10 years ago, it was a little company. It wasn't.
It was small.
I was there because, Susan was my client. I had coached Susan for a couple of years. I did calls for her. I remember meeting you. It was 10 years ago. I mean, the company was not the company it is today. I remember that.
No, not at all. And we had no clue about network marketing. Well, Kevin had you know, conceived ideas about what it was. He thought it was fill your garage with product, put flip charts in your living room, and you'd have no friends left. And I had no clue what network marketing was, except the other lawyers in the courtroom started calling me Pyramid Pam.
Okay,
first
so
behind my back.
So let me also break this down, Pam. I've been in network marketing in the industry for over 30 years. And so my era of network marketing is like dinosaur era compared to what today is. But even 10 years ago, the industry is not what it is today because there was no Facebook, there was no LinkedIn, there was no social media. I mean, websites were prevalent. There were still autoresponders. But it was not – internet marketing was not what it is today. There was not the same kind of exposure. It was still on the edge of still old school. Now, what people see today is a whole different faster, better, quicker model. Products are better. Your company didn't have the same product line that it has today. It's really grown up. It wasn't the same business that it was. Now, you didn't know that, but look at the difference in it in 10 years, what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a whole different
mm-hmm.
game. So like 30 years ago, it wasn't nearly as legitimate as it is today. Tell us a little bit about your book on what you bring to the table, how the industry does have some, it has a few dark spots, it has companies that go out of business, the FTC does get involved, but tell us why network marketing is such a great industry that you and your husband love it and you write a book about it.
Well, I think, first of all, it brings out the best in people. I know that, you know, it seems a little kumbaya, and once upon a time I would have never talked about the soft side of things, but I have grown a little bit since I first got started in this profession, and I think there's no other profession that, first of all, places such a high value on personal growth and personal development. So to have a course like Breakthroughs or an event like Breakthroughs would have never happened in my other careers. It's not even fathomable to think of something like that. My other careers were all about, you know, negative backtalk, and I worked with wonderful people, and of course there were bright lights and there were great things, and I think I made a difference in some people's lives, but nothing close to what we've been able to accomplish with network marketing. It's like that little pebble in the water and the ripple effect that you don't even see how far it goes. So I think, number one, that for me is huge. Number two, all of just the basic business breakdown. When you look at the tax savings, that was huge for us. That we thought, okay, this totally makes sense, the tax savings, the business acumen that you get. I have a master's degree in business, and I didn't learn half of the stuff in university that I learned that cost me nothing. Actually, I was making money while I was learning about how to run a business because you get great training on that. And I think, you know, really just no employees is huge. To not have to spend money on leases or rent for a storefront. And all of the research, development, shipping, customer service is looked after by someone else. So you get to do the fun stuff, which is connect with people, talk to people, help people, and, you know, make money while you're doing that. To me, it's a win-win all the way around.
So you were also able to realize some of your dreams. You were able to move from the Ontario area, from the Toronto area, to Western Canada. Is that correct?
That is. And that, you know, I have to say Kevin and Caleb both love skiing. I like skiing, but what I loved is how happy it made my son and my husband. And now that we live in the Canadian Rockies in this little ski town that is, you know, Rolling Stone magazine called us a couple of years ago the coolest little town in North America. It's a wonderful place to be, great place to raise a family, and we would have never been able to do that because our jobs wouldn't have allowed us to live in a place like this.
So let's discuss what your first year like in network marketing was like, you and Kevin. What was that transition like, your first year and your second year?
The first year was so busy. You know, we're both working 60-plus hours a week in our jobs. Kevin went to the K-9 unit with an emergency response tactical unit. I'm prosecuting drug dealers. We have a 5-year-old son, several rental properties, and we're just trying to breathe. And we're doing our business in the pockets of our time at night after Caleb went to sleep. And our business grew like crazy because we had no idea what we were doing. I remember doing coaching calls with you and being so frustrated that people didn't see what I saw. I'm like,
I forgot about that. I remember this. You used to say this to me. I forgot about this. You used to go, what's wrong with these people? I go, Pam, they're Canadians.
Yeah.
And he would go, what does that mean? I would go, it means they don't know anything about business. And you and Kevin, I remember Kevin blowing gaskets on me. Remember this?
Yeah, totally.
He would go, what's wrong with you? I go, Kevin, you got to stop yelling at me. He goes, I'm not yelling at you. This is
we
classic.
Didn't get it. We thought, how come everyone doesn't want to do this? You know, first of all, you find a product or a service that you're passionate about, which is great, because I have lots of products and services I'm passionate about, but none of them pay me. You know, if I made some money from Apple every time I recommended them, I'd be killing it. But it's like, we just didn't get it. You know, you find a product you love, you're using it anyway, you tell people about it, they try it, they're happy, you get paid. We were thinking, where's the problem here? How come nobody's connecting the dots? And, you know, it was us in a lot of ways, for sure, because in the beginning, Kevin and I were just take no prisoners. Like
you were on fire, but you didn't understand predictability.
Totally, no clue.
You didn't understand that how human beings are predictable, and you would get disappointed in people. Now you started to understand that over the annals of time, relatively quickly, and you adapted and adjusted. You also went on to rank advance relatively quickly, just like you said. So here's something that many people don't grasp, is that exceptional people have exceptional habits. Now, you and Kevin, I was there. You were building the business in the pockets of your time. Then when you went full-time. But tell them what that means to have exceptional habits.
We did income-producing activities in those 2 hours a night. We didn't spend time. First of all, we didn't even have Facebook till we were earning over a six-figure income with our company. So we didn't have a Facebook profile. It's tough to go from working undercover and prosecuting drug dealers to splashing your personal life all over the internet. That was not my want-to-do thing. So we built belly-to-belly, talking to people, connecting with people. And that was, you know, people we knew clearly, and anyone who was in 3 feet of us heard about what we were doing. So that's what we were doing. We just talked to people, and we were sharing our excitement and our knowledge and information that we had. And then we were, I have to say, in the beginning, trying to push them into decisions. And we've learned a lot since then. But, you know, I think, I don't know if I would change much, because it was all a learning process. And I'm sure a few people said no, because we were just so over the top. But the right people said yes, and the right people ran with us and worked with us, and now, you know, we're meeting people all over. Now we are online. We do meet people on the internet, because we live in a town of 4,000 people surrounded by rock and mountains, so we do meet a lot more people that way. But, you know, I'm still pretty passionate about just getting to know someone, look in their eyes, have a cup of coffee, chat. I still believe that's the way that works best for us.
You have a great chapter 4, called Addicted to Average. And then there's a quote there from the author of The Alchemist, says, there's only one thing that makes a dream impossible to achieve, the fear of failure. And unfortunately, that is so true. A large percent of the people I coach from multiple businesses, Pam, you know this as well as I do, they have anxiety about failing rather than putting energy into succeeding. They put more energy into being overwhelmed and holding on to a story. In your chapter, what does that really mean, addicted to average?
I think so often we get comfortable with where we're at, and I know that I was, and wherever that comfort zone is for you. For some people, it's being able to pay the rent and have enough food in the fridge, and for others, it's being able to fly business class around the world. You know, whatever your comfort zone is, we get stuck there. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being comfortable, but it's really tough to move ahead when you're comfortable. Unfortunately, I have a husband who's never comfortable and always wants to keep moving and keep going. And he has inspired me to do the same. And I just really feel that if we could let go a little bit of this Netflix-induced coma that so many of us fall into, and take time instead to read great books or come on calls or listen to podcasts and do things that are actually going to help us grow and change, we can accomplish exceptional things.
You can. And what are some of the accomplishments that you and Kevin have accomplished in your years as a network marketing? Top on some of the highlights. I'm going to bring you to some of the lowlights.
Well, the highlights for sure have been helping members not only of our own organization, but others be able to define what freedom is for them and help them work out a plan to achieve that. We have, you know, our very first woman that said yes to us is a gal named Erica. She was our massage therapist.
Is that Erica Engel?
It is Erica Engel. Very first one to say it. Yeah, she's amazing. And she was hard working. She had two other massage therapists. She was only in her 20s. Two massage therapists working for her. She had leased out this beautiful space. She was doing great. And, you know, she was such a hard worker. She said yes to us. So she starts working with us, She attains a six-figure income, leaves her practice because she wanted to be a mom. She'd gotten married, and she said, you know what? I can't think of another way that a mom, a stay-at-home mom, can earn a six-figure maternity leave other than network marketing. She said, if I hadn't found network marketing, I probably would have never had children because I wouldn't want to have them if I couldn't afford it. And, you know, you hear stories like that, or we have another guy, an engineer, who, you know, was leading a pretty life that had seemed to be set for him by his parents, and he was doing things that didn't really inspire him, and he wasn't making much money in network marketing at the time, and he said, you know, I finally believe that I can write my own script, that I don't have to follow the one that's been written for me. And I also, like, I have hundreds of letters and emails and texts, probably thousands, and I have these big banker's boxes, and I print them off, and I keep every single card that's ever been sent to me. I take pictures, screenshots of text messages, and I print them off because people say thank you. They tell me, you know, they tell me their story, what's happened for them. And every time that I have a bit of a wall-kicking moment, I used to call them ass-kicking moments, usually my own.
You can say that on my call.
Okay. Or having those, you know, those, hey, this, you know, the big blame parties and victim parties, and hey, I'm still guilty of that occasionally, not as often as I was once upon a time, but I pull those out and read through those and think, wow, okay, this makes a difference. This is changing lives. And it's not the money. You know, you can measure the money and you can talk about the ranks and circles and squares and stars and unicorns and all of those things. And I don't belittle that. I think that people need recognition and that's important to them. But to me, if you could measure the change that happens in people's lives, so the husband or wife or partners that are kinder to one another or kinder to their children, or they can do things or take an extra day off work so they can go and watch their kids perform, or they're a young person who can pay for college and actually get out from under whatever's suffocating them at home. But the things that have been able to happen, people leaving abusive relationships because they can now afford to do it, you can't put a dollar value or a rank title on any of that. And to me, that's the brilliance of this business model.
Now, you've been in this industry for 10 years. You also, like you said, been undercover, been in the legal system for 22 years. I want to ask you something because you've seen this also in your police work. Why do people stay average when they have so much talent and they have all these opportunities? Now, you've been able to evaluate this as a team builder, a talent scout, a woman of influence and affluence. What is it that some of the common denominators that keep people average? Because then I'm going to ask you about exceptional people.
I think social acceptance, the fear of not being accepted by your peers or community, the fear of being different and stepping outside and being able to say, hey, I'm going for it. I think that's really what keeps people held back. And that could be someone who's very close to them. I know we've coached many women who their partners don't support it, don't want them to spend the money, don't believe that they can do it because maybe they've tried things before and it didn't work out. I really think social acceptance is the biggest holdback for a lot of people. And then for some others, you know, there's a woman that I had as a confidential informant. So she was a drug dealer and she had done a few things. She went to prison. Or she was in jail at the time. She hadn't moved on to prison. So she's in holding. And she called me to go and meet with her because she was going to give me some information on a bigger drug dealer, which would help reduce her sentence. And she was, she was a prostitute. She didn't have a high school diploma. She'd had a rough life. But in jail, they were offering up their general education diploma, so the high school equivalency, for free. They could take this, and she told me about it. I said, this is great. I'm so happy for you. That's awesome. You get to do it while you're here. She said, I'm not going to do it. And I said, why? She goes, I don't need to. I don't need to do it. But What she was really afraid of is showing the other women prisoners that she didn't know how to read. She didn't want to be in a class where it would expose her weaknesses. And I think network marketing shines a huge light, not only on all the sparkles and stars and things that happen, because that usually is the showcasing of the person's end of their journey, right? Not the crummy stuff that happens at the beginning. We never put that part on stage. But, you know, we're so anxious to be approved of and to be celebrated that I think so often we're not prepared to put the work in.
I once coached a person who was a semester away from graduating from their high school diploma and had dropped out, and they had so much anxiety about the GED that they wouldn't take it because they were afraid they will fail it rather than looking at the probability of being able to pass it and the accomplishment. Now, many people have fear of failure. Fear is really a misused word. It really means they have anxiety. They're overwhelmed about the possibility of failing. Now, you faced the ultimate failure. The ultimate failure was being found out and having your cover blown. How were you able to... That was good, isn't that good? They have no freaking idea, right?
That would be very bad.
I get the question of the year award for this one because I really did reach... I thought about this one all day. So most of society really does. They have fear of failure, but you had to be on the edge of being found out. Now, what would happen if your cover is blown and you're in a tough situation? You're facing death. You're facing a life and death situation. You're not facing failing. So how are you able to quiet that inner chatter? How are you able to talk yourself out of the ledge and not telegraph your anxiety about getting found out? Because that would be the ultimate failure. Would you agree?
Oh, that would end very badly. It would be painful at the least and much, much worse beyond that. But in the time when I look back on those moments, and I can think of specific times, and, you know, it still makes my palms sweat a little bit to think about it, I just thought of the end in mind. So why I was there, what our mission was, what we were going to accomplish, and I thought, you know, just one more minute, just one more minute, just one more minute, and it always worked out. There were a couple of tight situations for sure, but I just always believed, I truly believed that I would end up okay and things would happen and I would get out of whatever sticky situation presented itself.
That means you're resourceful, you're innovative, you're creative, and this is what many people are not. It means they're educated, but they don't have street sense. What does that actually mean to have street sense, and how important is that to have it in a business?
It's very important because you need to be able to react to changing situations. You're not going to be dealing with drones or robots. You're dealing with human beings that have all sorts of baggage and background and beliefs that you're not aware of. And being able to listen for those and being able to adjust so that you can connect is really the really huge part of what we do, not only, you know, as undercover police officers, as lawyers, when I'm questioning people, cross-examining people, and then again, as a network marketer. Now, I got over the cross-examining people in my first year. I used to do that a little bit, but now I'm past that part. I'm much better conversationalist now. But, you know, being able to listen and appreciate that whatever that person's telling you, it's likely true for them. You know, I hear all these people that train on how to handle objections by questioning how people currently spend their money or trying to, you know, lay all this stuff out. And I don't think that's helpful, personally. I think
we're on the same page on this. I love this, hearing this.
Yeah, it's just what they're saying is true for them. When they say they can't afford it, that's what they believe. And it could very well be their credit cards are so maxed out that they can't even pay the interest payments. Like, there are a lot of things going on in people's lives that we have no idea about. And the same in the drug, when we were working in the drug world, you know, you didn't know if the stripper you're buying coke from that night had just been sexually assaulted, beaten, you know, if there were no physical signs, you had no idea. And I became friends as an undercover officer with many of them, and just the stories and the things, and you want to talk about resourceful women who are in the sex trade and who a lot are there not by choice, become very, very resourceful and live lives that, you know, most of us could never understand.
I've coached them. I understand. I do understand. I know. I've coached a few of women who have gotten out of that situation alive, and they are still very resourceful. And that's mm-hmm. and this is what many people do. They're intelligent, but they don't have street intelligence. They're mm-hmm. they have IQ, but they don't have EQ. And in owning a business, it requires a different set of skills, habits, and mindset. And you cover some of that in your book. In some of the later chapters, you cover what is really required to be able to make it in this industry in the chapter, The Back End, and also Show Me the Money. What do you cover in those two chapters, The Back End and Show Me the Money?
The back end is really about the company that you're partnering with. So, you know, in drug language, my back end is the dealer to the dealer. So that's really who you want to get to. And, you know, I don't draw the analogy that your company is your dealer, so to speak, but you really do have to have a great relationship that's based on trust. You have to agree with the culture because that's a huge part. Of course, the products are a no-brainer or the service is a no-brainer. You have to really be excited about that as well. But your back end really has to support you. It's a symbiotic relationship. It can't all be about the company or all about the distributors. There's a marriage that happens there that works for everyone. And when you find a company like that, you partner with a company that really puts that at the forefront. Makes a huge, huge difference. That can really be a make or break in success.
It is. I want to ask you, because you now live in, do you live in the Okanagan Valley? Is that where you live, in that ballpark?
No, I live about 7 hours. I'm close to Montana, to Glacier National Park. I'm on the other side of those mountains.
Okay, I know right where you're talking about. So that would be where Coeur d'Alene, that's where Washington, Idaho, and
yeah, I'm
and
4
Montana
hours
meet.
Away from there.
Okay, so I know where that is. So that is like God's country. You know, a lot of American movie companies go up to Banff and Calgary to film their westerns, and they make it look like it's in Colorado, but it's really up in there. So it's just beautiful. I know that's a little further, but where you live is breathtaking. I do know that. I have spent much time in Bozeman.
Okay.
Bozeman, Missoula. You're a little further north, but that is
yeah.
Glacier National Park. That's whitefish and all that. That's fantastic.
You got it. Yeah.
So here's the question. So you once lived, Barrie is near Toronto, right?
Correct, yeah.
Right, so you had a dream to move west in what it would be called God's country. How important is it to have a vision and then be able to create the outcome?
Oh, having the vision is huge. We used to holiday at ski towns. You know, you get a couple of weeks for vacation. Kevin and I would save them up and had seniority to take them when it was convenient for us, and we'd always come to ski. And I remember being on the chairlift in Whistler one time saying, you know, how can we get here? What do we need to do? This was before network marketing. Like, how do we do this? And then as our network marketing business grew, we thought, okay, wait a second. We don't have to live in a particular town because of our jobs. We can live wherever we want because we can do things remotely, and we can travel back to do events and meet people and see people when we want to. And that was huge. We had a vision board. And at first, I have to admit, Jeffrey, that vision boards, I thought, was kind of goofy, cutting out magazines and all that sort of thing. And I thought, like, I have 10 years of post-secondary education. I bought drugs and jumped out of moving cars. Are you kidding me? I'm not going to cut up magazines. Like, what are you guys talking about? But I did it because people that were much more successful than I was were talking about it and training about all of these things and creating a powerful vision. And so Kevin and I did it, and we still do it every year. We reevaluate. So the week between Christmas and New Year, we sit down and map out what we want to accomplish in the next year, 3 years, 5 years, what we want life to look like. And we dream really big sometimes and we don't let it slow us down to think, well, we can't do that, because somebody has it. Somebody's face is on the cover of Success magazine. Somebody lives in that house at the top of the mountain. Somebody flies to that country whenever they feel like it. Why can't we? Somebody's doing it.
Pam, what's important to someone who's listening to this call tonight? They're either struggling or they're in their first year, and you've heard this. I'm not where I should be. I'm not where I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
My business isn't moving. Someone said that today. Well, I'm like, no shit, chief. I mean, it's not your business isn't moving. You're not prospecting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. Share a little bit with them what being in action really means.
Really, I think it's comes down to your belief in what you're offering and your belief in helping other people accomplish that. So when we start making it, at least this is true for me, about myself and what I want to have happen and how I want things to work out, it never seems to go well. But when I twist it around and take a look and think, okay, this person has this need. They've expressed this to me. They've talked to me about that. And if I can offer them a solution that works, it works out really well. Now, there are a lot of times, especially when I was working full-time, that I didn't feel like picking up the phone. After a 10-hour day in court, arguing all day long, and then coming home for a few hours with my young son, trying to give him every ounce of energy I had left, then to pick up the phone and be enthusiastic and interested was challenging. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say that, hey, I just walked into my home office and I was all about network marketing and all about my products and I could hardly wait to get going. There were a lot of times I had to get myself into that. I used to listen to a little Rocky clip beforehand, and some people listen to music, some people don't do anything, but for me, that's what I did. And
Eye of the Tiger, is that what you mean?
Well, it was
by Survivor.
A monologue that he did in his last movie where he's talking to his son about, you know, it doesn't matter how hard you hit, it matters how you get up and keep moving forward, and nobody can push you down unless you let them.
Also, in the song, it says, don't trade passion for glory.
You got it. And, you know, for 2 minutes, I'd listen to that loudly in my headset. I'd pick up the phone. I'd start calling people. And after dialing the number and someone actually picking up and saying hello, that fear and exhaustion and boredom, because there can be times where boredom comes into play, would disappear. Because now you're having a conversation with somebody. But the time leading up to that, picking up the phone felt like a million pounds, or I'd try to give myself a million excuses. Well, I have to prep for court tomorrow. I don't have time for this. I'm exhausted.
Now, hold on. This is a key point. This is a very key point here. So I've coached Marine fighter pilots. I've coached, you'll understand this, people in CIA. I've coached people that work deep six undercover. I coached a gentleman in the Justice Department who unequivocally was a great network marketer, who was a five-figure monthly income earner working undercover in foreign countries. He always carried a gun at all my events. I mean, so I've coached people who drove lead Jeep in the Hummer in a minefield. Yet many of these people could not pick a telephone up. They could put their life on the line,
mm-hmm.
but it's the meaning we give to it. Mm-hmm. So I've seen people who will sacrifice their life for their country, but they have this story about rejection. Can you cover a little bit about that, how important it is to let go of the anxiety about outcomes that haven't happened?
Absolutely. It's so easy to serve when we think it's about the greater good or something outside of ourselves. And Jeffrey, I know you've coached me on this, about the deserve issue, that we don't deserve the success. We don't deserve that. And it's a story that we make up that really prevents us from picking up the phone a lot of times. We call it fear, but I think for a lot of people, I'm speaking for myself in particular, there's that whole deserve issue that comes around it, and making it about ourselves, and that's why it's so daunting. But the biggest cure for, you know, inaction or feeling like your business isn't moving forward is to actually take the action steps, and that's talking to people. I know there are people who've built amazing businesses on Facebook and Instagram, and I hats off to them. That's not been my strategy. I really just like talking to people and meeting people and connecting, and I'm so grateful for Zoom now, Zoom calls, so I can look in people's eyes and actually feel like I'm right there with them. So I guess I use technology for that. But really, what if you set the clock on your phone or beside your desk or wherever you're making your calls from and say, okay, for 10 minutes, I'm going to make calls. And if in 10 minutes I don't feel better, I'll allow myself to quit. I'm going to do 10 minutes.
Well, what happens, Pam, is a lot of people don't have the character to change because they're so stuck in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Remember I used to spend time on this, and I know you get frustrated. Why are we talking about this? You're like, I don't want to talk about this. I don't want you to coach my team on the past. I want you to coach my team on results.
Yes, I remember.
God, I'm funny tonight. But do you remember? Here's something you and Kevin have. Like, your fiber is laced with character. and you have standards. And one of the things you had to understand was that not everyone has your character and standards. Mm-hmm. And you and Kevin create standards. You elevate a team because you have it. But not everyone has it. How important is it to meet people where they are?
You know, and here's what I've come to realize, because we didn't meet people where they were when we got started, and then we struggled. We hit a plateau, we struggled, so we thought, okay, we're going to meet people where they are. But what I have found that's worked for me and for Kevin is that we meet people where we're at, and we honor where they are. So if we're running, we're not going to stop and bend over and whisper because someone isn't ready yet. We're going to run up to them, and we're going to respect and honor where they're at and let them know that we'll be there for them when they're ready to get into action and to do the things that they've told us are important to them. So, you know, right or wrong, I'm not really sure. But to me, that really seems to be an integrity for where we're at. We want to honor people, but we also want to respect ourselves. And integrity is so important. I think a few times it has definitely slowed us down, and you know all about that, but it's still hugely important. Trust, character, honesty, at the forefront.
It is, and belief is a huge important factor.
Huge, huge.
It is amazing how people can absolutely deliver and produce in a job, be given the opportunity to live their dreams. Many of them get overwhelmed, go into anxiety, have low-level panic attacks, and then are paralyzed by the thought, opportunity, and belief that they might be able to live their dreams. Now, the underlying emotion that affects many people is guilt. And many people are too guilty, and they have challenges deserving and receiving, just like you said. They are over-obligate, they give, they serve, but they have challenges serving themselves because the word selfish gets in the way of being able to create results. And you have really seen that firsthand, and just like you said, you meet people where they are. Tell us a little bit about the future of the book and the book tour and what you see happening with this book, because I see it being a bestseller in many markets.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I know I just did a radio show yesterday. I did a book tour in the East, and I'll be doing lots more in 2018. And our goal is to get the book to as many people as possible, especially the skeptics, especially into the hands of the people that say, that's a pyramid, that's not a real business. What kind of people? Only people who are losers, who can't do anything else, do that. I don't want to be, you know, knocking on my neighbor's door and setting up parties and all of that sort of thing. And they make disparaging comments about companies that they know nothing about. And my real hope is that we'll all have one day where people have a side hustle and that it's network marketing, because it can fit into anybody's lifestyle. And so that when you say, you know, what do? People may say, hey, I'm a teacher, but I'm also with XYZ company. And that it's respected and honored like it should be.
Tell them a little bit about where they can purchase the book directly. Is it available for purchase, or am I one of the few that actually has a hard copy in my hand?
Well, you got an advanced copy for sure, but now it is available. So you can order it through bookstores and things, but the cheapest way is directly from the distributor, and it's at alawyerscaseformarketing.com. And for all of your listeners or anyone that connects with you, Jeffrey, we put a discount code together, COMBS, capital COMBS, and that gets people free shipping on their order. And if they're in Australia or the UK, shipping can be a bit challenging, so we've put a 25% overall discount for people in the UK or Australia, New Zealand. So you can use the code capital UK or the code capital OZ for Oz for those other countries. But anywhere in North America is free shipping with the code COMBS.
We will have a lot of listeners in the next couple of days. We get in well over in the hundreds of people that listen to the podcast the following day. So there'll be people ordering this book. Once again, this book is absolutely a game changer for anyone who may not be in belief of the industry. This is a book you want to put in someone's hands. This is a book that unequivocally, when Pam has paperbacks, you're going to want to buy boxes and multiple copies of this. So, Pamela Barnum, it has been my absolute privilege to have you on my call tonight, and I want to just tell you how much you and Kevin mean to me. The two words first class does not do justice to the character and standards that you bring to not only network marketing, direct sales, but life. You are two of the most exceptional people I've ever had the privilege of collaborating with, having at events. Looking forward to seeing you in February. It's been a long time.
I know. It's going to be great. I'm excited.
So look forward to you. Happy holiday to you, Pamela. I'm going to go ahead and let you go here this evening. One more time, where can they get the book?
A Lawyer's Case for networkmarketing.com.
Good night, everyone. I want to thank you for being on tonight's call. Once again, if you would like to get a hold of me directly, you may Facebook message me or contact me at 209-932-0227. Thank you, everyone. Good night and goodbye.